Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is George Cabaz, 17 years of career experience, a captain with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue on Rescue 19. From a young age, George always wanted to be a firefighter. The noble calling, duties, and responsibilities that come with the profession, something about the trucks going down the road with sirens blaring, helping individuals in need during whatever emergency the situation calls for, and as an added bonus, doing so within the community he grew up in. George was my humblest guest yet, soft-spoken but to the point. And when you hear him speak, you too will understand. With that, I present Mr. George Cabaz.
So my name is George Cabaz, and I think every young man dreams about being a fireman at some point in his life. And for me, that dream never faded. So after high school, a lot of my friends pursued careers, different paths. I chose the fire service. I knew nothing about it. I just knew that it was a noble calling, something I wanted to be part of. I had no family in the fire service, but I just knew in my heart it was something I wanted to do. And I never looked back. I fell in love with it, and I've been a student of the fire service most of my adult life. So that's why I love the name of your podcast, by the way. It really resonates with me.
Awesome, man. No, I'm glad. So with that being said, and you knew that you've always wanted to be a firefighter, how did you find your way to Miami-Dade?
So, it's almost like Miami-Dade almost found me. You know, growing up, I grew up in Miami-Dade. I didn't know fire trucks were red. You know, down here, the trucks are green. This is kind of a full circle moment for me. I remember, today's my birthday. And the reason I picked today for the scheduling, because I actually took the test for Miami-Dade on my birthday.
Okay.
Almost 17 or 18 years ago. And it was the greatest gift I've ever gotten. So being on this this discussion with you is really a full circle moment for me. So I'm very grateful. Yeah.
No, that's awesome, man. Miami-Dade
is my first and only department. Yeah.
Well, first off, man, happy birthday. Hey, that's pretty... It's pretty awesome. You chose to set it up on your birthday. So that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I want you to tell the listeners, like, you know, since you knew this is what you've always wanted to do, what was your process like? What was your journey like getting into Miami-Dade?
Oh, gosh, it wasn't easy. I pursued it. Again, I didn't know anything about the fire service growing up. I pursued it as a civilian right out of high school. And the road was a little bit tough for me, and I failed multiple times. I stumbled, but I knew that I needed to be persistent. And then when I finally had the opportunity to test for Miami-Dade, by the grace of God, things worked out. Again, it wasn't an easy journey. I'm still learning every day, but I'm definitely grateful for the path, you know.
Okay, and when you when you applied, I'm sure back then, man, I mean, it's hard enough getting on, from what I understand and, you know, talking to other individuals, a Florida fire department, but how many applicants were out there when you were trying to get on the test?
Gosh, I don't know the exact number, but it's in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very coveted department. There's a lot of opportunity, a lot of growth. So yeah, I was very fortunate. Like I said, it's the greatest gift I've ever gotten. That's for sure. So, yeah, I'm beyond happy, beyond words. I never fell out of love with it, you know? So
no,
it's been a good journey.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So you take the test, you get the call, whatever the case may be. How was it like going through rookie school? Was it surreal?
It was. That's a great question. I actually enjoyed it very much. It was for me an opportunity to really grow, you know, as a young man. I was amongst men, amongst amazing people that really sort of shaped me and formed me. And I look back on rookie school fondly. I was out of class 117. And I remember all those faces. I remember all those guys I went through it with. And to this day, we still talk to a lot of them. It's such a large department that we don't see each other all the time, but we definitely, when we do bump into each other, it's definitely a fond memories, nice moments that we reminisce on. Yeah.
And if I can ask, how old were you when you got hired?
Gosh, I was young. I want to say in my I was 20, and I turned 21 shortly before after graduating. I'm sorry, shortly before graduating, I turned 21.
And I'm imagining like this is your first, was this your first like career job or have you had jobs before that?
It was my first career job. I had jobs, odds and ends jobs, growing up. Yeah, I worked as a dishwasher. I did the washing cars thing. I worked as an apprentice mechanic at one point at a state park, but this is my first career. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you make it through, I'm sure, which was, new to you, but like a grueling rookie school, and you finish out. What was your first assignment?
My first assignment was Battalion 4 B shift, which is in the north end of the county. And I remember that fondly. My first shift was on a truck. It was ladder 38 at the time, with a driver, an old a gentleman named Greg Harris. He was the senior man on the truck. Unfortunately, he passed away a number of years ago, but I still remember that first shift very vividly. Typically in Miami-Dade, you can either get assigned a house, or you're assigned to relief. I was assigned to relief for my first rotation, so I was able to navigate through the North End a little bit. Met a lot of amazing people throughout the process. It was great moments for me.
Okay.
Coming of age, in the fire service. I was thrown to the wolves, and I'm forever grateful.
I
Yeah.
get you. I get you. And so, did you find yourself automatically trying to find the individuals you wanted to emulate, or was that something you learned through on your own?
Wow, Dan, that's a great question. Gosh, man, I'm gonna get a little personal on this one. So growing up, my dad wasn't around when I was growing up, and being around these men that wanted to see me grow, that saw potential in me, that really, like, they became like father figures to me in a lot of ways, and I'm very grateful for that too. As far as seeking them out, gosh, I don't want to sound too preachy, but man, I feel like the Lord put them in my path. Amazing men, like for example, I'll drop his name, Alex Rivas. He's now retired. He really took me under his wing and showed me what it is to be a fireman. I was also taught the difference between being a hard worker and being a good worker, and they tried to really define that for me, because I was a little bit all over the place when I was young on the job, and I was thankful enough for men like Alex Garcia and Ralphie Gonzalez. These guys took me under their wing and taught me how to be a good worker. They channeled my passion, I guess, if you will. Yeah.
And if I can ask, because I love that saying that you stated. So if I can ask, what is the difference? Just in case somebody out there listening is trying to figure out for themselves which category they need to be in.
Good question. I think being a hard worker is having your heart in the right spot, really coming in with that intensity, coming in with that passion. And I think learning the details, learning how to be organized and systematic in how you do the job is what makes you a good worker. But I think having that desire, that drive to be a hard worker, it sort of translates over time into the good worker concept, But you just, yeah, it's you just have to find those people that can help you channel that energy in the right direction. In other words, like completing a task, starting a task and completing it all the way through, as opposed to starting something and then jumping into something else. Being methodical, being detailed, being attentive to those details. I think that's the difference between being a hard worker and being a good worker.
Awesome. And with this being your first, career job, you're 21, you're being exposed to different things. Were those challenges hard for you, or did those men that you mentioned like show you, hey, like have you ever ran a chainsaw, whatever the case may be, like did they show you the steps in the way?
They did. They were very patient with me. They were very empathetic toward me, and I think they saw the good in me. I was definitely rough around the edges back then, and I appreciate them for taking the time to see me grow, to seeing something in me, and trying to cultivate that. I learned a lot from those guys.
No, that's great. That's great. I mean, because I can relate to you, because I started in the I started my career young, and when you're young, you think you're invincible, you know it all, and you need those men and women, those individuals to like pull you aside and be like, hey, listen, like this is not how it's done. This is how we do things here. And as you get older, hopefully things begin to resonate and you begin to mature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes in life, you're not ready to receive a lesson, you know?
Oh,
Like
definitely.
life can be a cruel teacher, and you get the test first and then the lesson later. But I carry those lessons with me, and I try to be I try to pass them on to my young guys and gals coming up now. So, which is what the
Okay.
fire service is all about, right?
That's right. I mean, it's all about expanding that knowledge, letting those that are coming behind you, like show them the way, show them the right way. Don't just criticize and complain. You're exactly right.
Sure.
The term aggressive, what does that mean to you?
I think I like this term aggressive. I think it's synonymous with passion. It's synonymous with being a go-getter, with being a good fireman. But I think we need to preface that with another word, I guess, intelligent, right? I think we need to be intelligently aggressive in the things that we do. And I think the way you become intelligently aggressive is by trying to master the job, trying to really understand our tasks, understand the job. And I think the more we understand those tasks, the more we understand our work, the more we increase the boundaries of our operational world, and then the more intelligently aggressive we can operate. So I think, again, it's synonymous with passion. It's synonymous with being a go-getter, but I definitely think we need to be calculated in our approach.
And it's probably safe to assume those individuals that you would it's safe to say you probably would call them mentors in your life, correct?
Sure. Yes, sir.
I'm sure you pretty much watched and they pretty much teached you the ways of how to work around a fire ground, correct?
Sure.
So with that being said, can you describe to us, or can you remember what your first structure fire was like?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So I remember I was with Captain Angel Machado, and this would be my first structured fire on the line.
Okay.
It was a single family home down in Westchester, and I was with a captain that I looked up to a lot. I admired him very much. I still do. His name is Angel Machado. And I was his rookie. He was hard on me, but I appreciated that. And I remember being first due. I remember pulling that pre-connect. It was an F load at the time. And I remember making the push into the house. And one thing I remember vividly was hearing the fire. You couldn't see much. It had a nice I remember a nice neutral plane. I remember being able to see below the smoke, and just sort of li listening, hearing that fire roaring. And we go toward it. We finally get to the seat, and he just tells me, and again, and it very respectfully goes, just take a second. We're here, breathe, and just watch it. And we didn't watch it a long time, of course, but he taught me to be judicious, mindful of the water, so we don't cause any damage in the structure. He taught me how to hydraulically ventilate after the fire went out, and I just remember that like it was yesterday. And I'm very grateful for that moment. He turned that moment into sort of like a not a teaching moment, but in a sense, I really appreciated all the training that culminated up to that, if that makes sense.
It definitely does for me.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. All right. So, it seems like to me, and not everybody has this experience, but it seemed like from the get-go, from your first assignment, that the men and women you're around, man, they embraced you, They taught you the ways of how the fire service should be. So, with that being said, when did you realize that you were ready to maybe promote up to the next position?
That's a great question. Initially I never wanted to promote. I thought I really respected and admired the rank of the senior man. And fast forward a number of years that I'm on a I became a TRT, technical rescue technician. And I worked with a man named Jay Rodriguez on the squad. It was a two-man heavy rescue at the time. And this man, Lieutenant J-Rod, he really sort of shaped me. Like he was the one that really helped me see the bigger picture. He pushed me to promote. He felt he saw something in me. Like he thought I was ready to take that next step. And just being around him, being with him on the squad, just being a two-man unit, we really got to know each other really well, you know. And he imparted wisdom on me that that I felt was very special, you know. It was very unique. There are very few trucks in the county. I think that at the time that was one of the only trucks that was a two-man unit, other than the hazmat truck. And working with Lieutenant Rodriguez and just being around him, he's a very well-respected lieutenant on our department. He was a senior back then, in tenure on the job. And again, just the pearls he imparted on me, the wisdom sort of outside the job. And one thing he told me is that stuck with me was that we're bigger than this profession. As much as we love this job, that we're bigger. There's the that you know. In other words, we don't allow the job to define us. We sort of define it in our own way. So working with him sort of inspired me to take that next step. It really did. And then, unfortunately, you work with other officers that maybe, you feel that they're not making the right calls, and you want to be that person to step up and do right, you know.
Yes.
So I promoted probably around the 11-year mark.
Okay. I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm glad I did my time as a fireman. I'm very grateful for that tenure as a fireman. And I think it's important.
No,
Everyone's got a different path, a different story, but you know.
yes, definitely do. So what was your next step from firefighter to what?
It goes so our promotion rank, driver's not a rank for our department. It's sort of
Okay.
like an unwritten rank, if you will. You know, we have a lot of respect for the drivers, for the senior men, but it's not a rank sort of like within the rank structure. So the next step would be from fireman to lieutenant. So I promoted to lieutenant. Sort of again, full circle moment. I was assigned to Rescue 38, that station where I started out at on my first shift. I got wrapped there. Wrap is a random assignment. That's what they call the random assignment process. I got wrapped to Rescue 38 with the crew that I had no idea who they were at the time, and we ended up becoming great friends, you know. So I'm a big believer of no matter where you are, you're exactly where you need to be. And it was a great first rotation for me as a new officer. I had a great time, and then shortly thereafter, I bid Rescue 7 in West Little River, and I was there for almost 4.5 years. On that rescue.
So your lieutenants, I mean, I've done an interview with of course, Raymond, and he's on my Miami-Dade too, but I just want to refresh my memory. So when you get promoted to lieutenant, do they always assign you to a rescue unit, or do you go, or can you go to like a fire suppression apparatus?
We all long for that fire truck. But when you get promoted, so you sort of get bumped back down seniority wise to the bottom of the barrel, if you will, when it comes to seniority. So typically the junior officers, we get assigned to rescue companies or maybe like routes, different where you sort of bounce through different trucks. Or sometimes you're just relief, meaning you report to a chief, and then he or she will assign you wherever there's an opening. But I felt like as a new officer that it was important for me to be somewhere, you know, to sort of cut my teeth to have a crew to train with to build that continuity. I still think that's important,
No,
especially
definitely.
an officer,
Yes, 100%, 100%. So if you don't mind me asking, because whenever and every department's different, but whenever you get promoted, they assign you to a crew. Some individuals might know somebody in that crew, some individuals you don't know anybody. So when you're coming into that position, you never know whether you're going to get go-getters or you have to motivate them into go-getters. So what was your process like to measure, like, okay, I'm going to this assignment, this is my company. You want to try to figure them out.
So I try to see the good in people, Danny. I don't know if it's a flaw of mine, because sometimes I don't always see the bad as much, but I always see the good in these men and women, but for me, I think it stems from me. Like I felt that as an officer, I had to articulate to them what was important to me. Find my non-negotiables as an officer. For me, they're treating everybody with dignity and respect, leaving the place better than we found it, things like that. Those are my non-negotiables, and I articulated them early. And I've had amazing experiences, just being around people, and I feel like it's my job as a company officer to try to bring the best out of them, and they bring out the best in me. It's a symbiotic relationship,
So at any point in your career as a lieutenant, did you, I'm sure you found it challenging, right? And were you able to make that call to somebody you trust that's in that position or maybe a higher rank to go, hey, I'm newly promoted, this is the situation, whatever the case may be, and then they lend you that advice? Because it's to me, we do an awesome job when it comes to like preparing. Well, I don't want to say we do an awesome job because it all depends on where you're at. But the best analogy I can put is let's just say Miami-Dade is wanting to spec an apparatus. An apparatus committee is formed, and let's say that committee meets 9 months to a year before they finalize how they want that truck to look. But when it comes to officer development programs, it's like, as long as he passes this test, he does well on whatever oral interview, chief's interview, all right, he's good to go. We'll give him like the bare minimum of this is how you use whatever system you use for your department, and then go. Like there's no nurturing and education of what it truly means to be that officer.
Thankfully, in Miami-Dade, we do have an officer development program,
Okay.
which covers a lot of bases. It's a great program, but it's geared toward administration and things like that. They do have tactics incorporated into it, but they do give us that foundation. The books in and of themselves, reading the policies, that sort of makes you privy to the way the department operates. But for me, I think it was. Sorry.
No, you're good. We're still
Oh,
here.
sorry, Danny.
You're
Are
good.
you there?
Yep.
But for me, the most important thing was surrounding myself with the right people. I was able to even, good senior men, good young guys, people like Lieutenant Reggie McKnight, who, Raymond Dorval, these guys that we would just pick each other's brain. My study partner, Merejildo Gonzalez, one of my best friends, we would just sit down and sort of, hey, this happened to me, man. What do I do? And sometimes it's in hindsight, but that's how we learn. We got the test first and then the lesson after,
Right,
so
right. Okay.
but yeah, just building that network of people you trust, people you look up to, yeah, the department sort of gives you a foundation, but I think it's up to us as officers to surround ourselves with the right people.
Okay. And you mentioned Lieutenant McKnight, which I've had on earlier, and awesome individual. So is it safe to say, are you one of the guys that meets them at the training academy to flow water, to to do those heavy workouts together?
Man, it's been a while. I was fortunate enough to be with him. I was one of his instructors when he was the head of the recruit training program. Yeah, I've been in there with him, and he is a physical specimen, to say the least. But the one thing I admire about Reggie is his level-headedness and his empathy. That he is someone that really does genuinely put his heart into everything that he does, into everyone that he meets. He, you know, whether it's a recruit, whether it's a young fireman, whether it's he just wants to see everybody grow. He wants to bring out the best in people, and I have the utmost respect and admiration for him. And he's one of these guys that really truly leads from by example, which is the only way, in my opinion.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Training on a budget.
Yes.
I'm not sure what Miami-Dade's operating training budget is, but with you being a lieutenant, like, what's your go-to? What do you like to do for training?
A great question. To quote Lieutenant Jim McCormick from FDTN, he says the basics always work, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. So through Lieutenant Dorval, through Lieutenant McKnight, I sort of picked up the stretch throw forth concept, right? Like if and you know at throw and search in there, if you can master those basics on the fire ground, we feel that you can do anything. So as far as training goes, and for me personally, I try to focus on those basics. We try to attain mastery of those basics. And when we put on a drill, like a company drill, for example, we'll focus on one thing. And going with that, you know, we try to incorporate a crawl, walk, run concept, you know. So we'll start maybe with a 20-minute chalk talk or presentation and discussion, if you will. Then we break off into little skill stations. And then we culminate everything into a scenario. And of course, the scenario I feel should always be in gear, that we can't get enough time in gear. So yeah, again, mastery of the basics always works. And I think it's probably the best way to train on a budget. You know, everyone's got a ladder, everyone's got a, you know, a door prop, hopefully. You know, we can all stretch a line. And yeah, and getting in gear is priceless for sure.
Are you an engine guy or a truck guy?
I right now, so our rescue companies, I feel that we operate as truck companies.
Okay.
So if my truck is first to on a fire, we're gonna do a primary search. We're gonna force those doors. My OV is gonna safe the structure. So we really as currently I'm training. I'm really focusing on that truck work. I try to make the mission clear. I think it's important for firefighters to have a clear and direct mission. So that's why I make it to my clear to my guys and gals that hey we're a truck company today. We're gonna force that door. We're gonna do an aggressive search if we can, and yeah, and we're gonna maybe go to the roof sometimes. You know, if the chief to the chief at the chief's discretion. You know, so our truck our rescue does have saws on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, our station's a technical rescue station, so we have a ladder there currently. So we try to work. We try to have a good working relationship with our ladder. So it's a very strong culture at 19, thanks to Captain George Sturr, these guys like Doug Alonzi, these Romy Sejas, they've been there forever, and they keep that culture going. And yeah, we're sort of truck minded over there. We definitely like the fire attack stuff, but we need to again. Our mission is defined that we do the truck work. Primarily.
And with you guys having such a good culture at 19, I'm assuming you also want the same with your crew, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, do you mean like individually or like
Sure. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, so 19 has a tendency to attract, you know, good people. Like if you're going to work at 19, you know that you know we're about the job. So
Okay.
thankfully, I'm surrounded by across all three shifts, amazing, amazing men, you know, there. So it's guys that truly love the job. My job is very easy, you know. These guys have no limits, and it's kind of incredible, you know. I'm very fortunate for that.
Could you take us through what a normal shift looks like for you when you come in?
That's wow, Danny. I guess you ask awesome questions here. So
Mm-hmm.
I for me personally, I start the day with a workout,
Okay.
and I'll invite I'll put it in the chat, tell them what we're doing, and we'll start the day with a workout. Typically, get to the station around 5 a.m. and we'll work out from about 5 to 6. At 6 o'clock, our official shift change at 19 is at Miami-Dade is 0700, but at 19, again, having that strong culture, everybody gets there at 6 o'clock. That guy or gal is relieved at 0600 on the dot. So from about 5 to 6, we participate in a workout. Sometimes, we'll do fire ground skills. We'll get our gear on, and toward the tail end of the workout, we'll do drags. We'll do ladder throws. We'll do sledgehammer swings. Nothing too crazy because we still have to be ready for the day, but it's definitely a good buy-in. And then one thing that's sort of unique about 19 is that in the morning, we trust each other enough to know that that truck is ready to run at least the call. In other words, the equipment, it's going to be taken care of. That's how much we trust the other shift. That's how tight we've become. So one thing that's very important to us, once we get our gear on that truck, we check our air pack out, we make sure the basics are good to go. We have a cup of coffee with the guys, and amongst everyone sitting there at the table outside, we're all just sort of solving all the world's problems over that cup of coffee, and I think that's very important. So it is a very busy house. After our coffee time, we'll get our truck checkout out of the way. We do the duties for the truck, for the station. I always tell my guys and gals, we make sure that our gear is squared away, then the truck, and then the station. It's the sort of the priorities of work for us, to quote my friend Matt Barrera. Yeah, it's make sure the priorities of our work are established, and then run some calls, have fun in between. And as I said, we treat everybody with the utmost dignity and respect. I take a lot of pride in that, in how we do the job.
So you definitely, I mean, the way I look at it is like you want not only yourself, but you want your crew, whenever they respond to whatever call it may be, you want them to treat that citizen as if it was their own family member.
Absolutely, absolutely. I even like I have a heart for people that are homeless, for example. Like I always tell my guys, it's not our place to judge their situation. If that man calls because he wants a bed for the night, I who am I to rob him of that? You don't know if this person was a war veteran. You don't know their backstory. So everyone's a father, everyone's a son, everyone's got something, I'll hopefully, gosh, I don't know. That's a tough one, but yeah, I think regardless, it's not our place to judge anybody, any situation. So yeah, everyone we encounter, like even the blood pressure checks, I like those. Those are easy for me. We go there, treat people nice and clear, But yeah, I think it's very important to be non-judgmental in this profession, You don't know, you know what somebody's going through,
Yeah,
Yeah.
and like you said earlier, everything comes back full circle.
Yeah.
I truly believe in
Well,
karma, and treating people how you would want to be treated and never judge a book by its cover. So I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah. It's yeah. I don't want to get too long-winded, but even just yesterday, we had a call at a storage facility for a man that needed some medical attention. And it's a Sunday morning, the place is closed, and it came from a third party caller. And long story short, we end up sort of finding this man on the second floor, and he's living in this facility. He's in his 80s, and he's living in a storage facility. We thankfully he didn't have anything going on with him, but he was hungry. We got him a sandwich. We just told him where the firehouse was in case if he ever needed anything. And I find those calls very rewarding. I take a lot of I see a lot of beauty in them. Where you can sort of color outside the lines and help somebody that that their current lot in life isn't, exactly where it should be,
It's a win. It's a win.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always feel like, being a fireman isn't just about, putting that wet stuff on the red stuff. For me, it's those small interactions that really set us apart,
100%, man. 100%. I couldn't agree with you more. It's more than just, putting the fires out, cutting the patient out of the car, cutting patients out the car. It's as I've heard other people kind of term it before, the non-sexy stuff. You know what I mean? Like a
The
simple
not glamorous.
medical, yeah, a simple non-medical call where, if you notice someone's hungry and either if you have the capability, you give them a sandwich or you go get them a sandwich. Man, you never know how that'll come back on that person tenfold.
I mean, yesterday the gentleman, when we gave him the food, he teared up, and then to be honest, so did I. Again, those moments, those little moments, really sort of I feel define my career. Those are the moments that I personally long for. Those small interactions where you make a big impact on somebody, maybe in that small interaction that you had with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
But.
Well, with that being said, you are a lieutenant now, so you're in the leadership role. So if I can ask you, what is your opinion on the definition of leadership?
Man, so there's this it's that's interesting. There's this principle in philosophy that I use a lot in the way I approach the job, and it's Occam's razor. And Occam's razor says or states that the simplest solution to a problem usually the best solution. And for me, if I can break down leadership into its simplest form, I think it's just leading by example. In my opinion, there's no other way. When you're passionate about something, when you're genuinely passionate, I think that passion can be contagious, and it can also repel people. Maybe it'll repel people that are on the same sheet of music as you are. But I think leading by example is really the only way. It's the simplest solution to that, the leadership problem. Do the work.
I know, absolutely. I mean, and I'm sure you, out of all people, know you can't. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. If you look at in terms of whether it's athletes, distinguished actors, journalists, authors, the work was put in for them to be put in that category of. That's a great leader. That's a great athlete. So it's the same for us, right?
Absolutely. I think the person that I have the most appreciation for in the fire service is that good senior man, that good senior firefighter that doesn't lead from the top of the organizational structure, but from the bottom of their heart. The one that's still passionate about the job, the one that's not jaded, that still cares, that still wants to see, the young guys and gals grow. Those are the people that made the biggest impact on me, growing up on the job.
100%, 100%. Are you a fan of outside training?
And what sounds like fire conferences and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love it. It's funny, you hear we've all taken forcible entry classes, we've all taken engine company classes, we've all taken search classes. But even though you hear the same things, it's interesting hearing it from a different perspective or a different voice. I think you can pick up things that maybe, a pearl that you didn't find before or that you weren't ready to receive the first time. I love outside training. I love going as a student. Last year we went to this conference called Ancient City Fire Conference.
Okay.
Yeah, took a couple of truck classes there. And I'm going back again this year, so I'm excited about that. I'm a big believer in outside training, just learning from each other, different cultures, different ways of doing things.
Where is Ancient City? Because
It's
I've
in
never heard of that.
St. Augustine. It's in St. Augustine, Florida.
Okay.
So not too far from you.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah, that works. I mean, Florida's got a plethora of fire conferences. Now, it all depends on where you're at in Florida. But your state, the state of Florida has a lot of good individuals that are trying to promote the training, the culture aspect
Yes.
of the fire service.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. I think, even just like Orlando Fire Conference. I don't know if you've been to that one, but
I have not. I have so many on my list, man.
yeah. Orlando's a blast. I think you would love it. Steve Negley, Lieutenant Steve Negley, he's there. He's carrying on his brother's legacy with that conference, and I think he does a phenomenal job.
Oh, okay. Can you give me, because I like to know, like a little background on that? Because I've never heard of that individual's name.
So, gosh, I don't know him intimately, and I hope I'm not overstepping. It's not my place to speak of it, but he lost his brother a few years ago, and his brother was the one that started Orlando Fire Conference, and then Lieutenant Negley sort of took over and continued his brother's legacy through that training, through that fellowship. The iron sharpens iron philosophy, and if you haven't gone, anybody that hasn't gone, I think it's one of the best if fire conferences, in the world, in my opinion. Yeah.
All
Yeah.
right. Where you're a lieutenant now. I mean, I'm sorry. You're a captain now.
It doesn't, I'm a fireman at heart, Danny. So it's, it's,
Right,
I appreciate it though, but yeah.
I still gotta respect the rank. So you're a captain. So
Yes, sir.
when did I always like to ask the guests, when did what I like to call, like, when did your internal breaker trip where you're like, okay, you waited 10 or 11 years to promote to lieutenant. How long did you wait before you promoted to captain, and why did you promote to captain?
So for me, the hardest transition was from fireman to lieutenant.
And if I can ask, I don't like, but I'd love to hear the why, because I want others to hear why that is.
Yeah, so I it's gosh, for me, I it was hard for me because I love the job of being a fireman, and I was always a good soldier. To be transparent with you, I was good at, if someone asked me to jump, my reply would be how high. I was always a good soldier, and I enjoyed being a good soldier, So becoming a lieutenant, it made me uncomfortable and uneasy at first, being that person to call the shots. I'm kind of introverted and shy by nature, so it was definitely a push out of my comfort zone. Although I've sort of found my groove. It was still a very hard transition for me. I still struggle with it sometimes, to be honest with you. But I find that young firefighters, they want leadership, they want direction, they want a clear mission. So, like I said, if you state your non-negotiables early, and you're clear about what's important to you, about what you're passionate about your approach to the job, it does become a little bit easier. And then just working in the right places where you have the guys and gals with that similar mindset, it can be a little bit easier of a transition.
Right. So did you ever find yourself in a situation where you had to work on a certain individual, or you gave that individual a certain amount of time and they just weren't hitting your mark?
Good question. I think over time you sort of build a reputation, and people know that, hey, if you're gonna go work at 19, if you're gonna go work at 2, if you're gonna work at 7, you have to bring your A game. So thankfully I haven't really dealt with individuals that didn't meet the mark in that sense. Maybe that's something that I'm missing, because I haven't really had to put the screws to somebody. I think for the most part, the crews that I've had, I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of amazing people. Maybe I can think of a couple incidents where, but they were very minor. Like a dispute with my firefighters, and I'd say, hey man, you guys need to sit down and talk this out, because at the end of the day, we have a job to do.
Definitely.
We don't have to be best friends, but somewhere in between, we have to get this done. So I think communication is huge in that sense,
And so when did you realize, all right, I'm gonna go for captain?
So one of my dreams, one of my sort of career goals or dreams was that I wanted to be a station captain. The that role of station captain, that person that sort of is that drives the culture in a firehouse, I wanted that role. And I guess to be blunt, unfortunately, I didn't know that as a lieutenant, you would never really become a station captain. You can become a station OIC, so you'd be in charge of your shift. But to be that person, that sort of the head of the station that really drives the culture, that's where I wanted to be, Like right now, our captain at 19 is a man named George Sturr, and he was the captain when I got on. And I have the utmost respect for him because he's there at 19. He could be anywhere. He's at a very busy firehouse, and he really drives that culture. But for us, like he keeps it strong, and I want to emulate that. I want to keep that going. So that was really why I felt that I needed to promote, or I wanted to promote. I wanted to fulfill that goal of mine.
Okay. I want to make sure. I think I heard you. I know you waited 10 or 11 years, but at first you didn't want to promote. And there's always that topic, that little debate of there are some individuals who, let's just say I was a captain and I knew a firefighter who was jam up into the job, but they just didn't want to promote. Sometimes, they get that negative pressure of you need to promote, like you're being selfish. And I firmly believe like there are some people who just don't want to do that. And so if they don't, you should leave them in that position. Don't try to put one hand behind their back to, strong arm them into promoting, because I've known some individuals that have promoted to the rank of like captain. And when you see them a few months later, and you ask them, hey, how's it going? They honestly tell you, like, I don't enjoy this.
It's not a labor of love for them anymore.
Yes.
It's they have a different perspective on the job. I like I said, I think everyone's got a different path, a different story. So some guys, their calling is to be that back step, that driver, and they're not driven by incentives, like money or whatever prestige may come with a bugle. That they're driven by a passion, and that's why I respect that rank so much. Some guys, they're amazing where they're at. That senior man role, I think, is very hard to sort of fill.
Yes,
I
definitely.
the thing is, Danny, like, and this is something Lieutenant J-Rod, when I was with him on the squad, would tell me, like, it's kind of not easy, but anybody can get a bugle if you work hard enough for it. But it's the respect and credibility from that rank and file that's really hard to attain. That which was what that good senior man can attain, just by doing the work. Some guys unfortunately need to promote to provide better for their families, and that's 100% okay. But I think if you're good financially and you love what you do, I never really pressure anybody into promotion, because I like I said, I just have so much respect for that senior man role. I think it's important, and I think it's fading too.
Oh, 100%, 100%, and that's why I love trying to surround myself and try to emulate people that embody that role. Because you are 100% correct. That senior man, like the true definition of senior man, is definitely fading away. Because to some, the senior man means the person that's been here the longest. Okay, but how have they acted? What is their reputation like? You know what I mean? Like to me, the senior man, yes, tenure plays a factor, but it also plays a factor if that person is good at their job and always willing to lend that helping hand to others.
Yeah, where's their heart at? That's that
Yes.
the I feel like that's the main ingredient in most of the things we do, is having that heart.
Absolutely. And I love how you phrased it earlier, like you were a soldier. You were a true soldier when you were in that firefighter position. Because I mean, honestly,
And I enjoyed it.
that's what you need. Yeah, you need, like, I don't know any officer that doesn't want to have some hard charging soldiers in the back. Guys that are
Agreed.
guys and girls that are gonna get after it.
Agreed. That people that and that's something that you really can't teach, right? You know
Yes, you got to have that in you.
that genuine sort of spirit for service, you know. Those are the people I try to be around or try to surround myself with, you know. Because
Definitely.
it shines through.
You're 100% right. And like I said, we talked earlier. I just came back from the Jimmy Ellis conference, and man, I was fortunate to meet heavy. If I tell them that, I did tell some that, and they looked at me with such humility, like, dude, I'm just a normal guy. But to me, like, they are freaking rock stars, man. Like, I got to meet Roger Steer for one, Baltimore. He's with the Engine 8 Truck 10. And when I told him that, he kind of looked at me. He was like, man, I'm just a guy like you, but he's so passionate. He knows his job. And those are, like you said, how you try to emulate. Man, I have so many people that I try to emulate, and I kind of put them all in one, but take certain categories and passions they have. That's what I do. And people look at me like I'm crazy. Like,
No, man. That's
why?
how you sort of formulate your own style, you know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely,
Take a
man.
little bit from everybody, you know? Take the best and leave the rest, as they say.
I like that. I never heard that. I like that. Okay. Take the best and leave the rest. All right. You wanted to also hit on favorite and unfavorite fire service quotes. So I'm interested to hear this one.
Gosh, man, one of the things I hear often is that firemen, we're jacks of all trades, masters of none, And I sort of agree with it to an extent, but I think that yes, we're jacks of all trades, but we need to be masters of one, and that one trade we need to master is the engineering, science, and art of structural firefighting, because no one else is going to do what we do. So masters of one. Go ahead, sorry.
I've heard that before, but I just want to know, like, how did you come to that formula of it? Because I agree with you, but with the fire service, man, chief officers are so quick to say, hey, can the fire department handle this? Yes. And we just keep adding to our resume.
To the all hazards resume, yeah. But fundamentally, just being good at what we do, nobody else is going to be able to cut that person out of that car. Nobody else is going to be able to go into that structure and find those victims and put the fire out. I think that's why we need to master those basics, going back to that we were talking about the training. Like Lieutenant Jim McCormick said, those basics always work. And yeah, we can keep adding, but I just think we can't lose sight of what we're here for, and that is structural firefighting. We can't lose sight of that. So we have that's the one thing we have to master.
Okay.
I feel, yeah. Another quote, like I really don't like this one at all. I sort of despise it, and that's when people say that it's not my emergency.
Oh, that's a big one. Ah,
I think
yes.
the day they pin that badge on your chest, it is our emergency. And to quote Rick George from, he's a captain, amazing man. He says that although we're not responsible for the outcome, we're responsible for those actions. So I think that that's something that I've been sharing with my guys lately, thanks to him. I heard that and that definitely stuck with me. So, because at the end of the day, I do feel it is our emergency. But yes, we're going to be calculated, we're going to be intelligently aggressive, but we do become part of that person's problem, I think. And we need to take a lot of ownership in that and pride in that, and really, again, master those actions. And although we can't always control that outcome.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that 100%. It's a quote I've heard, and it to me, it always stings when it comes from a company officer. And it's like, really? Like, so, and I always kind of like to flip it on them, like, okay, that's not our emergency. If that was your wife or your daughter that was having the issue, the tones come out. I'm in that station, and I'm like, why are we rushing for it? Hey, I gotta go pee real quick, or I gotta finish my meal. Like, you wouldn't like that, but Anyways, that'd be a whole
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother, but yeah, that's why I just I like to stay mission ready at all times, you know, if I can. Course, we're all human, we're all fallible, but you know, just control the things we can control, you know.
Definitely.
Starting with our
And
mindset, you know.
yeah, no, I mean, aggressive mindset, mission focused. Like when I go into work, most of the time, unless I'm like feeling under the weather, I'm ready to go. I'm expecting, hey, today might be the day we get that call, that one in a lifetime call to make a difference. Like that's how my mind operates.
Yeah, that's what we train for. That's what we long for. And although we don't wish that on anybody, if it happens, we want to be there because we want to
Absolutely.
make a difference in that person's life. That's how I feel.
Absolutely. Do you have any more quotes?
I do have my favorite quote. I'm sure you've heard this one from Chief Edward Croker of the FDNY. I have no ambition in this world but one, and that is to be a fireman. I love that one. And yeah, I think the fire service is like a lot like a relationship, you know. You have to nurture it. There's going to be times I think when maybe you get bored, maybe you need some kind of way to uplift your perspective on it. But as long as you don't lose that love, that passion that you initially started with, I think you know, it's going to be a healthy career. It's going to be a good career.
If I can ask you, because you know you're the first, I'm assuming I'm pretty sure you said you're the first individual within your family to be a firefighter, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How, and I'm not sure if you have any siblings or anything like that, but how does that feel, man, knowing that you know it's been a lifelong dream of yours, you wanted to be a firefighter, and you can say that you are a firefighter, but also that you hold the rank of captain, because rank aside, like, to someone who truly cares about the job, man, there's no greater feat than knowing than getting that badge pinned on you that says captain.
You know, Danny, I feel like my proudest moment, like I said, it's those small moments. I think the badge that I love the most is was that fireman's badge, you know, because that's what starts it all, right? I think at the end, you strip away all those bugles, at the end of the day, we're all firemen, you know. And me in my position, I want to be a, you know, I want to be a support for my guys. I want to empathize with them. You know, so if the only reason or one of the only reasons I have that bugle is to make the life of my firefighters a little bit better, you know, try to empathize with them, try to make sure they're safe. So yeah, it is a good feeling knowing that I now have the ability to sort of facilitate that with that bugle. So yeah, I'm very proud of that captain's bugle, that's for sure. But I think my favorite one was that day that I got my fireman's badge pinned on me. That's something that I longed for my whole life, you know, as a young man.
No, I totally get you. I 100%. But with you being the role you're in now, like your circle of influence is just that it's greater, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah. You know, and something again, not to get too personal or preachy, but that's something I pray about often. Like I want my sphere of influence to be you know, to be good. You know, if I'm not doing it right, I don't want it. You know, I want it, just take it away from me, you know. But if the decisions I'm making, if the way I'm approaching the job is good, then yeah, then it's I'm honored that it can be expanded, you know, in some way. But yeah, so I'm definitely very grateful, you know. For everything
No.
that's been given, you
And I don't mean to like put you on the spot, it's to boast, beat on your chest, but like I firmly believe whenever we could put people in these positions that actually care about the job, man, like that's a big kudos to you, because I'm sure that was no easy feat. You had to study, you had to go against who knows how many people, and you were able to rise up and get a spot. Like, to me, that's big.
It is, and it definitely takes a village. You know, you need that support system, you know. So, yeah, it does. It is. I don't want to take away from it because it is big, you know, and it is beautiful. And I want to see my good firefighters grow and attain that, you know. But I also think it's important to love what you do. I believe like that there's no such thing as menial work, you know. That's sort of my mindset, right? Like from the man that sweeps the floor, cleans those bathrooms at the truck stall, to the person that runs a fire department, I think all work is important, you know. And it's but it's so it's not what we do that defines us, but how we do it, you know. So whether you're a fireman, whether you're a captain, whether you're the chief, whether you know you're a janitor, I think as long as you're loving what you're doing and you're doing it onto the Lord and you're doing the best you can, I think that's priceless, you know.
Definitely.
I don't know if that makes sense, but
Bro, you're good. I'm sure, trust me, I am hearing everything you're saying loud and clear, man. Loud and clear.
yeah, I think it's easy for us to take pride in our work, right? We get to ride around these big rigs and you know, the kids are waving and it's that person that has to do those menial tasks, but does it with pride and love without anybody really noticing that. That I really admire, you know. Their sphere of influence may be very small in that sense, but they don't care, you know. They're still pushing through, trying to make an honest living, and those are the people that I really respect the most, you know.
Definitely,
Yeah.
definitely. Before we part out, I always like to ask this question to my guests. So, and like this is not a to boast or gloat, but where would you like to see yourself in the future end up in the fire service? You know, everyone has aspirations, whether
Yeah.
I want to be a fireman, a driver, a lieutenant, captain. Where would you like to see yourself before you hang it up?
I've been thinking about this. You know, it's a good question. So my time in 19 has been wonderful. You know, Captain Sturr, who I referenced earlier, he's got about 3.5 years left. He's in what we call the drop. And my dream, although I don't think it's attainable, just because of the way our number system works, would be for me to slide over from the rescue over to the ladder company and become once Cap Stir leaves, you know, take over the helm over at 19 and until I retire. That sort of would be my ideal, you know, way to hang my hat, my lid, if you will, you know. Yeah.
Okay. And on a personal question that since you mentioned, so let's just say that captain that you talked about, let's just say he's on vacation. Who
Yeah.
fills that role for him?
Oh, so sometimes we'll do like swaps. Some people, I think they call them mutuals, right? Where I can work for him. But usually, oftentimes, it's not very glamorous. They'll just hire overtime, you know, unfortunately, sometimes. I'll try to, you know, I don't really work a lot of overtime, but when if he's out, I do like to kind of fill that role if I can.
Right.
But there's a lot of variables to that. It depends, you know, on your hours, if your hours are high or low, you know. So I don't always see it. But
Okay.
yeah, I guess it'd be nice to have that continuity, right? Like if he's out, maybe, you know, slide over. The problem is we're on different shifts, so
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
so that's why they would have to hire the overtime. Like
Okay.
a lieutenant wouldn't be able to ride up as a captain all the time.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay,
that's
gotcha. Makes sense. Makes
yeah.
sense. With that being said, I'm gonna give a shout out here, Raymond. I'm sure Raymond's gonna listen to this. So
Yes.
Raymond Dorval's the plug. Raymond, you are the plug
Yes.
for making this occur. Raymond hit me up a while ago, and he was like, "Hey man, I got a guy for you," and he sent me all your information. And I was like, "Much appreciated. I'll reach out." I called George, left a message. He called me back. And this is the end result. So
Yes,
George, man, I want to say again, happy birthday, number one.
sir. Thanks.
And number two, man, thank you for coming on. Raymond told no lies. Everything that comes out of your mouth is genuine. I can see you have a huge heart, a huge love for this fire service. Thank you for coming on here and spreading a positive message. I mean, all my guests do, but dude, you were a delight.
Danny, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. And yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. This is again a full circle moment for me. So I hope I wasn't boasting with the whole birthday thing, but
Nah.
definitely for me personally, you know, from taking that the test and then that day to sort of culminating it to this is a huge milestone for me. So I definitely appreciate that. And thank you for being part of it
No,
for
and man,
my day. Thank you.
thank you for allowing me to spread your message, man. Like seriously, like I'm 100% grateful that you accepted and that we were able to talk like this. And hopefully you're doing something special today or tonight for your birthday.
Yeah, we'll see. I appreciate
All
it,
right, pal. Well, you stay safe and you have a great rest of your day.
man. Thank you kindly, sir. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Have a good one.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.